for the NFL podcast is a big fan of the Double Doink.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan. Nice vest.
Thank you.
It is
you.
A nice vest. I enjoy whatever is happening over here right
it's
now.
January. You start digging through the closet. Bring out the big green vest.
Big green vest.
It's chilly. People think, you know, you live in Los Angeles and, you know, it's just hot all year round. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, my lovely wife would say, well, what's the point of living in California if we're cold all the time? Our house is cold.
Your wife hates
it
here.
It's tough, yeah.
There are some,
she hates
there's some evidence pointing to that.
Some.
Being true.
Hate strong. She's not a huge fan.
We had a tragedy right before we came upstairs. We taped an hour later last Thursday, back to our regular noontime Pacific, which everyone on watching on YouTube knows at this point. This Thursday show every week you can catch on NFL.com, on YouTube. Poor Greg. They did a nice job at the commissary, at the huddle, with a gyro.
About time.
A gyro.
Gyro.
Gyro. Gyro. Gyro.
No, only dumb Americans
tzatziki
call it
gyro. Sauce.
Gyro. Gyro.
Tzatziki sauce. Cucumber, tomato.
Nice pronunciation.
And I got mine a little bit earlier, knowing the 12 o'clock start. As Mark and I stand up to head upstairs, Greg Rosenthal takes his first giant bite into his gyro.
It's a messy one, too. Yeah.
And it's a problematic situation because he was under the impression that we were taping an hour later. How much of the gyro were you able to get down? Are you able to salvage it? Did you put it in the fridge? Did you throw it out?
Where I wish I had put it in the fridge. It's just sitting there on my desk.
Oh, to the pleasure of the people sitting around you, I'm sure.
I mean, no,
it's got an odor.
No one sits around us, so that's good.
Well, there are some shadowy league figures. And
the head of our newsroom
yeah,
is like
maybe
8 feet away.
Maybe a little less than half, and some of it got on my Eo. Pants as I was trying to like scarf it down quickly, so not ideal.
Well, you got two of the best gyro places in the city right down the street, and you're going to the huddle.
Well, there's not much time, you know. We had, I had NFL Now right before, you know.
Not all of us have a wife that works in the building, Wes, and brings us lunch in the middle of the afternoon.
Wait, I'm going to go. When was the last time
when you, is that happening?
An accurate dirty bomb shot at Wes.
When's the last time you walked off campus to go eat?
You know Lakeisha takes care of you. I
the
see
last
it.
Time I was here, 2 days ago.
I barely get a home-cooked meal at home. And I see Lakeisha running over these full newlywed meals, and it's like, damn, I got to get my wife in the
building. Who does the cooking in my kitchen?
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, wait till the child comes. Many things will change. I'm sure in your case, Wes, nothing will change at all. Everything will stay static as it is today.
I have never said that, nor do I expect it.
How exciting is it that we have reached divisional round weekend, famously the best weekend of the football calendar for many, because you got rid of all the Floatsome?
Flotsam.
Flotsam.
And Jetsam.
Jetsam.
Yeah.
Jetsam.
Sometimes, some years.
And the Jets.
Some years you don't. Like the Mariota Titans 2 years ago or the Tim Tebow Broncos. But
stop.
This year we got rid of them.
That was the Derrick Henry Titans and they're back for more.
Right. But that team was not winning any more games after they got to the divisional round. The Brock Osweiler Texans. My point is usually there's like one team that doesn't
just
belong.
Just doesn't quite
that
fit.
Has no chance to win the Super Bowl. I think all eight of these teams at least are fun to watch.
I will take that Tebow win over the Steelers,
way to
though.
Walk it back.
Well, you know, but if the worst team has Deshaun Watson as its quarterback, you know, you're doing all right.
And the
they're not going to the Super Bowl, though. Sorry.
The famous, by this standards of this podcast, feud between me and Titans fans. It came full circle. Put a nice little bow on it. A columnist for the Tennessean, Gentry Estes, reached out to me, and we did an interview about my complicated relationship with the Tennessee Titans this week, which you could check out, I'm sure, soon. The Titans are no more. But if they lay, what did you call it, Wes?
Nice,
what kind of egg was it?
More rotten eggs than a cholera-riddled Easter bunny.
If Tannehill delivers another 75-yard performance and they get blown out, Do we start to think that the Titans
Tannehill
are
wasn't
back?
Bad in that game.
No, he was fine. They won a game in Foxborough. No, they're playing the greatest regular season
team
of the decade.
I don't think so either. This feels different.
That's a nice story that the Dan Hansis and Titans like
you know, one could argue
it's heartwarming.
Dan's had his finger on the pulse of the Titans for the last few years.
It's a lot nicer than when the Chicago Tribune tried to ask, why do you have Ryan Pace ranked 32nd? Hey, how's that look? That's not looking as bad anymore.
Oh, way down.
All right, so we're going to go through the four games, of course. We'll do another halftime of the podcast to share some takeaways from the press conferences introducing the new head coaches in New York, in Dallas, and in Charlotte. And still nothing out of Cleveland, Mark. We're still waiting. Well, for the plume of smoke.
You have that zipped up very high, and I'm going to zip up my little fleece just to be just the same, to look the same as yours.
Okay. Welcome to the audio portion of the podcast, Mark. nothing out of Cleveland yet. No plumes of smoke from Jimmy Haslam's mansion estate.
And I'm not waiting around breathlessly for whatever they produce on that front. I mean, at this point, please.
All right, let's get to it. And remember, we got to make locks. This is Greg. You have a chance to really close out the season here if you can somehow gain ground on Mark, who is one game out.
I was going to say, there's 3 weeks left. That's not true.
If you're one game up on Greg, on Mark, two games up on me, three on Wes. So if you can nail this week, you are in the driver's seat, my friend.
I thought about this multiple times, and you could deliver a kill shot to me, essentially, I think, this week. At best, I tie you, which is ridiculous. Anyone calling a tie...
If you lost, but you would have to lose, which I have no control over. Yeah.
And we are eligible to pick any of these games, any team in any of these games. Is that correct?
Of course. Yeah, it's divisional round football.
I don't want any, you know, heat about it after. That's all.
All right. Let's get to it. What do you have up your sleeve?
Huh? I'm not. I don't even know who I'm locking yet.
All right. Let's get to
Please.
It.
Please. Let's start. I don't buy that.
I don't. No, I do not. Sorry.
Let's start with the Minnesota Vikings coming off a tremendous upset win in New Orleans. And their prize now is to head west, young men, to the big bell bottom to face the 13-3 Niners coming off a bye. This is the Saturday 4:35 p.m. game. And, man, here it is, Wes, because Kirk Cousins had the big overtime performance. They nearly let that game get away against the Saints, but they closed it out. And doesn't it feel like the Vikings are going to be feeling loose and the opposite of tight after stunning the Saints and now being an underdog once again?
Sure, I think they'll be loose. And it's Cousins against his most loyal and vocal advocate, Kyle Shanahan, on the opposing sideline. A couple of quarterbacks who had to prove themselves to football Twitter this year to get the benefit of the doubt. And I think Garoppolo did it maybe a month or two earlier than Cousins. But it's two play-action quarterbacks from the same sort of scheme, the same Shanahan scheme, Mike Shanahan. And I think you'll see a difference that Cousins likes. I guess it's not his reputation, but one of the best deep ball passers in the league. And when he's not passing deep, he tends to check down, whereas Garoppolo carves you up over the middle of the field with help from the best play caller in the business, opening large tracts of prairie land for his receivers.
Hmm. Question. You said tight and also opposite of loose. So aren't those the same thing, Dan? Just wanted to clarify.
You know what I was trying to say.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
See, it could have been more efficient, sure. But so
it's
could have
gone. It's over.
Yeah, so
it's
could
out
have
the
last
door.
20 seconds of the podcast. You know?
Exactly.
I'm thrilled to see this Vikings team.
I mean, you could have edited out of the show in post, and the show would have been better, and none of this would ever happen.
Yeah, but now you're going to get like funny tweets being like, oh, opposite of loose and tight.
okay, go
ahead.
Nothing
is organic in this production.
I am weirdly more excited about this game, I think, than any of the other
four. Oh, I can tell.
Four. I don't know why. I love this. I've loved this 49ers team all year. I think they're the most talented team in the NFC. They should be considered the favorite. And yet I think the Vikings are a very dangerous opponent for them this week because they're a veteran team who I think can transform what they do on a week-to-week basis. As Dan said, I think they're somehow better in this position as kind of the road team that's an underdog. They already suffered a terrible loss in Green Bay. And it's mostly just about the defense that they've been together for now 5 or 6 years. Eight of their starters have played together for 5 years. And you would think, okay, it's an aging defense. A lot of them aren't in their prime. But I don't know. It's like Kendricks is in his prime. Anthony Harris has been maybe the key player in beating the Packers and Saints in back-to-back weeks. Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin are playing certainly like they're in their prime. Danielle Hunter's amazing. And you look at them going to San Francisco, and I don't think if Adam Thielen is healthy, and unfortunately he hurt his ankle this week at practice, got stitches.
A weird injury.
We don't know what the deal is with that. I think if you just look at these two rosters, it's not like it's some big mismatch, whether it's coaching, whether it's talent, whether it's everything. It feels like this could be the Vikings' time. Like, they've been together. This is their third playoff run together. They've won a couple playoff games together, whereas the 49ers is the first time in this spot. They've been off a couple weeks, and it's just, it doesn't mean you just walk in and you beat the Vikings.
No, you can see it, because every year you get a team like this that a lot of monkeys thrown off the back in the past couple weeks for Kirk Cousins, and all that nonsense, all that narrative has been flushed out, and you see a team that's healthy. They've got, they were not the same when they didn't have Dalvin Cook in their wide routes, and we get all that. Yeah,
Thielen is a pretty big asterisk to the
right.
healthy.
We'll see.
But I mean, it's a gash that needed stitches, and he's at the point where he's saying, I'm just trying to figure out a way to get out there.
And he was huge last week, but I also look at a Niners team that has not been the same on defense without D Ford, and they're getting D Ford back. And, you know, the numbers and the splits from when he's not on the field to when he is are drastic, and it changes Nick Bosa. And they essentially, over the last five games, allowed quarterbacks to a 12-1 touchdown to pick ratio. I mean, teams were feasting on that defense. Mm-hmm. And I think it's huge to have them back. And there's something that happens when we cover these playoff games and a team like the Niners disappears from our hemisphere for 14 to 17 days. And then we're all delighted by the Vikings, as we should be. I mean, that was a nice, beautiful win by them. But you almost then click into downgrading a Niners team that has shown up in every single game they've been in this year. They're at home. They're the best team. They're the 13-3 team for a reason. I don't view it as prime, you know, trap game material for San Francisco.
There's no trap games at this stage. But to your point, like, you can easily forget about how battle-tested the Niners were throughout December before they went away on their bye. And here's the thing. If you're thinking that this is a team as talented as they are, that they're just going to run away from teams, it just hasn't been happening a while. During that test and all those matchups, games that were decided by 3-2, 7, but it was really 1. It was on that weird Falcons last play of the game. So 3-2, 1-3, and then 5 against the Seahawks in the last play of the game. This team has been playing tight games like the Seahawks. They've been finding a way to win games, and I can see another close game here. I really can. I think the Vikings are really well set up. The Thielen thing is huge. He's practicing, and somehow his ankle gets slashed, and he gets stitched up.
It's crazy.
Stephon Diggs is under the weather as we record this.
It's a short week, too, for them.
He seems to be on the right path, and they don't feel like he's going to miss the game. But, God, if anybody else remembers, when you get sick, you're not always right for a few days.
One mini notation. If we do discover that Adam Thielen was felled by an animal of any sort, that is still sandwich territory.
He did get tripped up in practice, apparently. I don't know. Maybe he got spiked somehow.
This is right up your alley, too, Mark. You have such a loophole here, if you want. Mm. We're all animals.
That's another way to look at it. I think I believe I said non-human, but I'd have to check.
And I am falling for, you know, the team that played really well last weekend, and could they play well again? Like, that is what's happening to me, and I don't care. Like, it's impossible to predict. It's not like I feel confident that they're going to win this game, but I did pick them to win, and it was.
But you know how you are when you pick games. You talk yourself into that scenario playing out. You get really into it when you pick a game.
Yeah, I do. I've convinced myself. I can. For some reason, I got this image of Kirk Cousins on opening night, the media night, and just the story of, like, they win this game, then they win in Green Bay, and then they probably get blown out in the Super Bowl. It just all felt like things are going to happen just because
the guy wins one big game.
Well, it's really not because of Kirk Cousins. It really is because of their team. It was their defense. They embarrassed the Saints. If it wasn't for the Taysom Hill play, they made the Saints look like they're little punks. I mean, their defense could not have played better. And there was something about it where it's like their team defense in terms of covering for each other, Kendricks in coverage, everything that they were doing, they sort of came together as one. And it was like the sum of their parts were greater, and their parts are great. And they've, and there is something to me about that they've been together this long, and who, this might be their last chance, and they played like their very best in the biggest spot, that I could just see that happening again. And I don't think the matchups are so bad.
I don't love all elements of their secondary, and I could see Deebo Samuel and Emmanuel Sanders having big days
Where,
I mean, it's, you
but
know.
That's where the mismatches are. I think they actually are a rare team that can throw some people at Kittle and Juszczyk, which is, there aren't a lot of teams that have linebackers. And they played three safeties.
Nobody can cover Kittle.
Nobody can, but they at least, they play three safeties every single snap.
Right.
I mean, they have Anthony Harris
Saints
out there.
And didn't make them pay for playing Andrew Sandejo at nickelback, which I believe Kyle Shanahan will make them pay for that.
The parabolic mics, by the way, Greg, did pick it up at one point. The Vikings said to the Saints, "You guys are our punks."
Well, I was going to use the B word, but I don't know if that's, you know.
That's
how I use it in real life. That's how I use it in real life.
You're a total pro, bro. Pro's bro. George, I could totally see George Kittle. He's already a famous football player, but maybe becoming a household name in these playoffs, especially they got to win a couple games for it to happen. But can't you see George Kittle having 175 yards in this game and just completely dominating? And then, you know, I think in general, football Twitter and how the game is covered, maybe this is just recency bias, but it seems like it's more sophisticated now, and a larger number of people are aware of how important Kittle is beyond just the passing game, and that he's also the best blocking tight end since Gronk is like a two-way player. He has it all going on. He's so important to the team, and you just imagine, especially all these guys, it's such a huge benefit to get a week off that even things we don't know about, they get a week to rest and get recharged for these games.
I think it helped the Vikings a lot. I think you're right, and now they're on a short week.
And now here we are. Kittle, I could see him going off, and that would be very bad news for me.
Greg, you don't want to – we could do a lock-off here. You're very invested in the Vikings.
I don't feel confident in that at all.
You were confident enough to publish on
NFL.com. Yeah, just to pick a close game. I mean, I would say –
who'd you pick?
I picked the Vikings. I mean, all these games are close to 50-50. I'm happy I went 3-1 last week. The lock was the only one that...
I mean, I wasn't setting you up for that information.
Right, well, if you're going to come at me, that's what comes back
I'm coming at you with an invitation,
no,
Greg.
Of course not.
Invitation to some sportsmanship.
I like them to keep it close, you know, more than anything. But I would worry a little bit that how much better the 49ers offense was down the street. I mean, the 49ers offense was better than their defense down the stretch. I don't really buy the whole D Ford factor. I mean, it helps to have an extra.
It's a lot of things going on. Their secondary was banged up. Quan Alexander was out the whole time.
He's back too, though.
Quan Alexander might be back too. I mean,
you don't think that Ford and Alexander make a dip? What do you mean you don't buy it? What does that mean?
That it was that huge a factor. I mean, number one, D Ford was terrible this year.
No, that's insane.
Okay, D Ford was productive. D Ford played 25 snaps a game.
Hey, don't back down so quick.
He's right.
That's his role. He only plays on passing downs because that's his strength.
He wasn't really healthy, so he was like their sixth lineman. So I guess I'm not buying that was like the whole reason that those 25 snaps a game that they declined.
I'm not buying.
If he'll be buying it by Saturday night.
Ford's a really good football player. That's all there is to it.
He is. If he had the year that he had this year, a year ago, they wouldn't have traded for him. They wouldn't have given him that contract.
I totally disagree. He's been playing really well this year.
But he played 400 snaps, I guess, is my point.
Well, you can be a designated pass rusher just like Cam Wake, who you love, and only play 20 snaps and still be really effective.
Quan Alexander playing in this game,
yeah,
for sure.
It sounds like it, and that helps him out, too. The Vikings offensive line, in theory, should be a weakness. They're looking a little better in terms of they look better when Dalvin Cook is out there in the running game. They've now been in this Gary Kubiak system for a year. They've pretty much played together. It's been the same five guys almost the entire year, so that's good. But the matchups are obviously not good when it's Armstead.
By the way, if you hire Kevin Stefanski, does Gary Kubiak go with you? I'd be concerned if the answer is not yes.
It's a pretty fascinating weekend for like the Mike Shanahan influence over these over the league. I mean, he's maybe the most underrated in terms of influence in the NFL. You got his son, you got Kubiak, and then in the other game, who do we have? Who am I forgetting?
That's a good question.
I don't know.
Way to put everyone on the spot there, Greg. I'm just through and take a look.
No, I'm just blanking on the other NFC game. It's another one of his proteges in Green Bay.
Matt LaFleur.
Matt LaFleur is under the Kyle Shanahan. It's all happening.
back to Quan Alexander. The biggest weakness of San Francisco's defense is against the run. In fact, all but four games this season did they surrender at least 100 yards on the ground. What did you guys think about Dalvin Cook? I thought he looked really good. I know his numbers didn't back that up necessarily. I think he was about 3.5 yards a carry, but they made him a focal point of the offense, and he seemed to be healthy. Wes, what were you seeing from Cook?
I thought he looked fantastic. I thought he looked just like he did earlier in the year when he was explosive.
That's a big X factor, too.
And I saw a stat from Next Gen Stats that he is basically lapping the field in plays in which he reaches 15 or more miles an hour, which just means he's explosive. I mean, he's truly an explosive running back, and he did it again last week. According to Next Gen Stats numbers,
84 yards in the first half. I want, if this is going to go Minnesota's way, you can't get into one of these scenarios where Dalvin Cook has 18 yards at the break and everyone's asking what's wrong with this offense. I mean, they need to just dial that up again.
And they need Hunter and Griffin to beat those two tackles who on paper are good, have been a little up and down in terms of Staley and McGlinchey, and make Jimmy G, who by the end of the year I felt like he had all the answers to the test. Like against Seattle on third and longs, you know, he knows that Kyle Shanahan offense so much better than he did in September, and he had a really good sense of basically where every receiver was and made a lot of tough plays to win down the stretch.
He was a top five quarterback in every major stat after the Emmanuel Sanders trade.
Let's pick this game, Mark.
I'm going to go San Francisco 27, Vikings 20.
West. That's good. Giving the Vikings some
all year, I said never pick against the Vikings at home, but they're not nearly the same team on the road. And I know they played well in the Saints Dome last week, but I don't like them outdoors against San Francisco, who's a better team. So 49ers 27, Vikings 19.
I'll go Niners 28, Vikings 24. Very good game. And as they've been doing, the Niners step up when it matters most, and they move on to the NFC title game.
I had a 30-27 for the Vikings. I think Kirk Cousins can do it again. It just feels like the 49ers are one of those teams that were great all year, and then suddenly it's like their season's over out of nowhere. I sort of hope I'm wrong, because they'd be a much
feels
more...
Feels like that to you.
They'd be a more
that
fun...
That feels like the Seahawks to me, too.
That'd be a more fun Super Bowl team to cover, and the best Super Bowl possible, I think, right now would include the 49ers.
All right, let's move on to the late game on Saturday. It's an 8:15 Eastern kickoff. The Tennessee Titans, yes, fresh off that huge win last week against the Patriots, ending the dynasty in New England. It's over. Do we want to talk about that more? I'm down with talking.
Sure, we've got as much time as we need. So.
Moving on. Close the book. On one of the great runs.
As you would say, you can't hurt me now. It is so nice that to have a weekend without the Patriots right now. It's kind of mind-boggling.
Mark and I have had every January weekend without our favorite teams for well
rich
over
person
a decade.
Dilemma right there.
All right, so the Titans, after that huge win in New England, go on the road and they get the best team in football, the 14-2 Baltimore Ravens, the first seed in the AFC. They have not lost since September 29th, 2019, winning and winning and winning. What can stop the Ravens, Mark? What can stop the Ravens? Is it the Titans?
Well, I think the recipe would need to be similar to what we saw last week, where the Titans, similar to the Vikings, kind of just feeling themselves right now, rolled right into New England and said, we don't really care about the history here at Foxborough or the fact that the greatest coach and the greatest quarterback of our time are lining up against us. And now in Baltimore, you know, it's similar. You're dealing with a force that is unlike any other team in the league. And you have to simply not care and go do what you are. You can't change what you are at this point. And it's not, I wouldn't worry about so much on defense because, Greg, you pointed out in your picks for this one that Cleveland kept Baltimore scoreless.
Greg made
20,
a face like he couldn't believe it.
I was shocked that you read it.
No, I like checking out the work of my friends. That's how it works. But you mentioned a good point that Cleveland went all out to shut down Baltimore and kept them scoreless for like almost the first half of that second time they played each other. And you just then they wound up scoring like 33 points. You just cannot keep Baltimore down. So the only antidote I would suggest would be Get, I don't care if Derrick Henry had 206 rushing attempts last game. You do it again. You do the best you can. This is your ticket out of here, because I look at the secondary and don't know how A.J. Smith's going to suddenly have a big game against one of the better man coverage secondaries in the league, something that Tannehill is specialized against. But Marcus Peters and Jimmy Smith, good luck with that. We'll see how that works.
I think the doubts that creep their way into the minds of otherwise uber-confident Ravens fans late at night take the form of Derrick Henry's 75-yard juggernaut drive to close out the first half against the Patriots. Mm-hmm. I thought he was as quick, explosive, big play-oriented, vision, everything, as impressive as any power back I've ever seen in my entire life last week. He was that good, and he has what Priest Holmes and Le'Veon Bell have referred to in the past as a flawless synchronicity with his offensive line, where his timing with his blockers and the way his blockers are playing is reaching that point where it's really hard to stop, and nobody's really stopped it in 2 months. It's right. Just it's one of these rushing attacks you only see come along like once every 3 or 4 years.
And if you think of that Ravens secondary, yeah, great in man coverage. I'd like to see Marcus Peters try to tackle Derrick Henry, or Jimmy Smith try to tackle Derrick Henry. The Patriots' plan was to let Henry, you know, run as much as he wanted and take their chances that way. And the reason it didn't work is because J.C. Jackson and some of their guys in the secondary couldn't get him to the ground. So I think Henry does his best work outside, and that's what they're going to want to do. Get him outside, get him against that secondary. Even the linebackers for Baltimore, you know, maybe aren't the greatest tacklers in the world. And hope for the best that you can break some tackles.
I give credit to the Titans for, because it's unorthodox in the modern NFL to give a running back the ball almost 70 times over 2 weeks. But it's like, we have something special here, and we're not going to worry about running this guy into the ground because he's one of the more special physical specimens that the NFL has right now.
And he's a free agent.
And what better time than now?
I hope it's not a DeMarco Murray situation, but that's also the reality of the business. I would think they would want to stay in business with a 26-year-old superstar coming off a rushing title, but you never know at this position. And so good on them, and I expect that to happen more. And you guys are saying Tannehill wasn't bad, and yes, I mean, it wasn't like he played poorly, just didn't do much at all. I think the ticket for the Titans here, they just got to play their best game of the season. They need to go on the road, and Tannehill has to be the guy that was shredding people. He needs to make plays, and I think that Derrick Henry has to have another huge game, and then they need a little help on the other side. I think the Ravens are that good where a lot of things have to break Tennessee's way, and one of them is, here are the things if you're a Ravens fan also. You're worried about Derrick Henry, obviously. You're also maybe a little nervous that this will be the first action of consequence for the Ravens regulars in 20 days when they kick off. That's 3 weeks. It's good. We're just saying it's great to have time off, but at what point does rust enter the equation? The Mark Ingram situation is something to watch here. He practiced in full last week during the bye week. Then he has what seems like a setback this week with a strained calf. He did return to practice Thursday in a limited capacity, which obviously is trending in a good direction. And then the last thing, I don't put much stock in this at all, but it's worth saying that for 3.5 quarters last January in Lamar Jackson's only other playoff game, he was pretty bad. And that was against the Chargers, and that's ancient history now. But, you know, maybe things linger in the mind in a big, huge playoff game. I still think the Ravens are going to win this game, but you could squint and find ways to make this game something that people are not expecting, which is very close.
I think we would just need that in that playoff loss last year, and when the Ravens have been, you know, damaged for a half at a time or something, there's pressure on Lamar Jackson. He's thrown off his element a little bit, or there's been mistakes. They just haven't made many mistakes at all this year, but Mark Ingram had a critical fumble in the Cleveland loss, and last year in that playoff game to Los Angeles, he never really got
right
in rhythm. He kind of even did in the second half.
They just weren't remotely the same team. I mean, this is the they ran for more yards, not only than any team in NFL history. They ran for more than they threw the ball. I mean, this running attack, this Ravens team is so much different. They are a track team, and I think the only way to keep up with them is the Titans are a bit of a track team too. I mean, Brown, Henry, Jonnu Smith, maybe Corey Davis. Those are the guys. They're going to have to rip off some 50-yard plays and I think win a game that's in the 30s. There's no way this Titans defense that has no pass rush is going to keep the Ravens under 30. I think they just are going to have to somehow win a shootout. And you never know, because Tannehill, I think he had the top numbers in the league against the blitz, 120 passer rating against blitz. He had some great throws against the Patriots against the blitz. Even though his numbers weren't great, he had
three of his top four throws in that game didn't count because of either drops or penalty, but he made the throws.
But even the third and nine that kind of clinched it and the touchdown, those were against pressure. And the Ravens blitz more than anyone else, makes them a little more vulnerable to a big play. Again, we're coming up with all these reasons only because the Ravens are so good.
There's everything I like about the Titans in this game. I like two things about the Ravens. I think Jeff Fisher put it well in an interview this week. He said, when the quarterback's got legs, you're a man short on D. When he's got legs like Lamar Jackson, you're two men short.
Yeah,
you're basically playing 9-on-11 when they've got Lamar Jackson and the way he's played. But I do think we've talked about Derrick Henry as one thing the Titans have for them, but it's not often that you see a power back on a streak like this with a quarterback also on a streak like this. And Tannehill, like Marcus said and like Greg has said, his great numbers, as good as just about anybody in the league, versus the blitz and versus man-to-man coverage. Tannehill basically has great numbers versus everything this year. He's been that good, and they have the weapons to keep up.
They just don't have the defense. I mean, Adoree Jackson being back last week, I think, helps them a lot because they had such a big drop-off from him. He did miss practice earlier, but it sounds like he's good to go. You figure he's the guy guarding Marquise Brown. The only defenses that had a little bit of success against Baltimore made them one-dimensional. They really shut down the pass. I don't think you're going to stop the run, but teams like the Bills and the 49ers shut down the pass. At least they have kind of a veteran coaching staff that I don't think I you don't know what they're gonna do. They change what they're like the Patriots and the Ravens. They change who they are week to week. I think the Patriots offense was shocked that the Titans came out last week and they didn't do anything. They didn't blitz them. They just said, "Hey, Tom Brady, beat us." They didn't blitz. I mean, they just sat back and they're like, "We don't think you have the guys. We're not gonna do anything." They didn't do anything exotic. They just said, "Beat us. You guys are trash." And
well,
that
they're
worked.
Right. It's not gonna that recipe feels less likely to succeed against
right.
Lamar
that's what
Jackson.
I mean. They're the type of team that I think then could go the total opposite way and get crazy this week. Whether that works,
I'm locking
or not.
Up the Ravens, and with no shame because I am in a I'm one
maybe
game,
a little bit because you already hinted earlier that is it okay if we can talk about it?
I'm one game behind Greg, and I'm gonna have to go into showdown mode next week. I'm not gonna do
it in showdown mode. I think you could look in the mirror, but it's just that was a bit of a tell when you did we lock up anybody
for this exact reason that and you already know what you're doing. You're trying to stir the pot. I could care less. I am taking them. They're going to win, and I'm going to next week. I'm going to have to figure out what Greg does, and I'm going to have to counter it.
You better hope the Ravens win too.
Well, if they lose, then I'm out, and that's the way it goes. See you later.
One thing that people sleep on with the Ravens is how great the defense has been because all this. Historic stuff going on offense, but they finished. Wes, you can help me out with the DVOA on this, but they finished fourth in total defense, third in scoring. They didn't get to the quarterback a ton, but they made big plays, and they have not given up more than 20 points. And we're just saying this needs to be a shootout for the Titans to win. They haven't given up more than 20 points in a game since week 5.
I mean, they play
on defense.
I feel like they play outstanding complementary ball. That their aggressiveness on defense fits perfectly with what they do on offense. It's just, it's awesome. I mean, that's what championships are usually made of. And beating them in Baltimore is going to take a heroic effort.
Let's pick it, Mark. You locked up the Ravens. What's the score?
I really admire what the Titans have done, but I'm going to go 31-20. I think that it's going to not go the way it did last week for Tennessee on the ground.
Wes.
Ravens 38, Titans 33.
Wow. I like it.
Ravens 37, Titans 24. But Titans, hold your head high. You ended a dynasty. We're all proud of you.
I mean, it was ending this week either way. 35-27, the Ravens.
All right, let's head to the tunnel for halftime and do a little bit of news.
Keep pounding isn't just a slogan, it's a way of life.
That's what Matt Rhule sounds like.
I didn't know that. Connor Orr.
I mean, I thought this change of coaches was maybe a chance to move on from Keep Pounding. I mean, I know, Ricky, Keep Pounding is near and dear to your heart.
It's so funny.
I love Keep Pounding,
it's
too.
It's so funny.
You do? I find it highly tedious.
Hey, it's going to be tough. You might not think you're going to get there. You're going to be tired, but you got to keep pounding.
I mean, this is 5 years old now. It was Cam Newton.
It's like the same thing as like chopping wood. Keep chopping wood.
No, it's so different.
It's like when right now.
It's chopping wood.
It could inspire our sound drop. You know, it could inspire Orson Welles. I think
taking the Panthers all the way to Pound Town.
The Panthers signed Matt Rhule to that 7-year deal. 7 years, folks. And you would be speaking with a little pep as well at your press conference. Any takeaways from the Rhule presser, Greg?
I thought he. You know, it's just, what does winning a press conference mean? I don't know, but he reminded me of like a preacher. I mean, he is such an amazing public.
Man,
I don't know
if that's ball.
Like, he's such a good public speaker. I think everyone watching that was just understood why he has them offering a 7-year contract and why every team that's met with him has wanted to do it. And everything he said, I think, is what you want to hear, too, if you were a player or a fan. Like, I don't think he's walking in there saying my way or the highway. It should be optimistic times in Carolina.
It seems like the kind of natural place to watch these pressers in our newsroom is one of cynicism, where if anyone missteps or does anything that isn't 100% appealing to everyone in the room, the guy is going to get absolutely massacred inside the NFL Network newsroom and a lot of jokes and all that stuff. I get it, and some of them have earned that because some get up there and they don't seem prepared and they're spitting out coach speak and mantras and philosophies. Rhule hit me a totally different way, and we talked on Tuesday about how it was Tepper, the owner, who went and really sold the Carolina Panthers to Rhule, but I could easily see why any owner would be, you know, swayed immediately by this guy. I don't think he's just a bunch of statements. Everywhere he's gone, he's transformed the program. And does that happen in the pros? Totally different situation than college, but a lot to like off of the first experience of seeing him.
The recent history of college coaches with no NFL coordinator or head coaching experience is hideously ugly. Hmm. It's that aside, I love the press conference, and I think that Tepper is the owner you want as a fan, too. I think it's a great time to be a Panthers fan.
What do you think about Tepper tried to change the game in terms of the head coach introductory press conference? He went with music for both him and Matt Rhule, which I thought was fun.
What was the music?
For Tepper, it was Imagine Dragons, Lightning and the Thunder.
But so Matt Rhule bringing Boom Boom by John Lee Hooker, one of the great blues songs of all time.
That was a little better, but when you were doing Lightning and the Thunder, it suddenly felt like it was like Silicon Valley, and it's like that clip of Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer like rocking out on the stage.
I don't know if I need that, but
that's by the way, criticism. Tepper is a guy, you know, cool dad is the vibe I get off Tepper, and
it was fun. I like that they're trying new things.
My son's 5 and 3. Imagine Dragons are the greatest, but they're the Beatles to my sons. They there's never been a better band than the Imagine Dragons. And then when they did that end of decade, all those retrospectives, like, the 4 of the 6 biggest modern rock songs of the decade was Imagine Dragons. So Tepper probably crowdsourced this one from his people. And said,
well, we
this
don't
is
know.
What will connect me?
I don't know. I
to
think
the youth.
I think he's
that.
The.
No, we
I think,
know that.
I think he's listening. I think he likes Imagine Dragons.
Oh, he loves Imagine Dragons. All right. Then the press conference that really grabbed me.
Yes, it did.
Was Joe Judge. He is introduced by the New York Giants, and you want to talk about winning a press conference. I'm not saying the jury could be out if you think he won it or not, but I've never seen a guy that was more determined to win a press conference. A man that clearly put in the work. It's like Wes getting to the office early today and tape grinding, tape dogging. I couldn't believe it. It was basically a crack of dawn, and Wes is at his desk just studying.
Never went to sleep last night.
That's what I felt watching Joe Judge, who was intense. He never broke eye contact. It was almost like if Bill Belichick could create like a protege head coach in a lab and then put it on a stage and have it talk and move, it would be Joe Judge. So did I think it worked? I don't know, but certainly I understood why people were impressed by it. Let's listen to a little bit of Joe Judge, who also did the great move of, because the big thing around Joe Judge, of course, is like, who is this guy? Joe Judge, it's not about who
he
is.
Well, maybe I can explain that a little bit better, but instead of saying, who am I, by telling you what's relevant in this conversation with being a coach of the New York Giants, what I'm about.
Yeah.
And what I'm about is an old school physical mentality. It's a tough division, and cities full of tough people.
Tough people in this
and
city.
And they expect to see
the Big Apple.
A program. They expect to see a product, that represents them. And I'm going to do everything in my power every day to make sure the people of this city and this area turn on the TV or sit in the stadium seats and are proud to say that we're their New York Giants.
This dude. Put him I'll go through the wall for Joe Judge. All rise, baby.
Your heart was a flat. This is what you wanted out of Adam Gase's opening.
It was the opposite of the Adam Gase. In fact, talking to a very respected Jets beat reporter, Adam Gase, one of the things that was a disaster about his presser wasn't just that he was looking all over the place and just was flighty. He was unprepared. And what Gase didn't get, and Gase's big problem is that he doesn't get things, is what this guy did get. And coming from Bill Belichick, you are a prepared person. He made sure he wanted to make a good first impression, and I think he really did. I think within the building, I think with certain members of the media, the fan base, I think is going to be all about this presser. It's kind of what the Giants needed after what happened with
Rule. He got there early and shook every reporter's hand before it started.
Oh,
it's very
so earnest.
He seems very – I could see why the people who revere Tom Coughlin liked Joe Judge.
My favorite line of his from a tweet, Judge says he's not interested in some fancy, in quotes, guru scheme. Kind of just blowing up everything that everyone thinks they're about these days. He's just like, I'm going to come in here and coach the Giants, you know?
Dan Steinberger, the Washington Post, had one of my favorite tweets ever last week. Life is a never-ending succession of NFL teams adding ping pong tables with stories about how they're finally coming together as a family and enjoying each other's company, and NFL teams removing ping pong tables with story about how they're finally taking football seriously. And this is sort of a corollary of that. Mm. We're done pussyfooting around with this fancy offense stuff. We're going defense, toughness, physicality.
Which marries up pretty well.
Eye contact.
You can see what Dave Gettleman likes about it. So that
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say ESPN.com reports that Judge is expected to speak with former Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens about being part of the team's offensive staff.
They worked together for a long time in the past in some college air stops.
How come to the
at
big
one
city?
Point, Freddie Kitchens, when Judge was just younger on the totem pole, made him.
I've never been on an airplane.
Which one's saying that? Freddie Kitchens?
He's gone. Yeah. He's not connected with you.
I know, but that feels slightly.
This is what Dan and Damashek used to say about me when
right.
I first
it's
moved.
It's
got to
be a reality show. Freddie in the big city.
So this is Times Square. Look at all the tall buildings.
A down on his luck coach tries to revive his career in
a Sbarro.
In the Big Apple. It really
New York
has
pizza.
A lot of potential. Joe Judge has
down on his luck making like $6 million a year to do nothing right now. So.
Joe Judge had an interesting
all over my
background.
Bullets and everything.
He used to be a kindergarten PE coach, and you could totally imagine that of him as a
totally.
Stern PE coach. And if he dealt with the problems in kindergarten, he could deal with them on the football field.
What I learned coaching PE, okay, for 3 days in West Point School District.
3 days?
Was
I didn't know it was only 3 days.
The patience you have to
West
have
Point.
With children, okay? I mean, I had kids, you know, dancing on the windowsills. I had kids, you know, peeing themselves. I had kids doing everything.
I just liked hearing them.
He's a terrible substitute teacher.
Kids peeing themselves.
I like this guy
in the introductory presser.
All right,
Coach Judge.
And then Mike McCarthy. Did anybody have a takeaway from that? I regrettably missed the Mike McCarthy introductory press conference in Dallas.
It was what you would expect. A lot of backslapping, and you could tell. Him buying into the Cowboys mystique was sort of important. Like, he talked about how he told the story of how Jerry Jones finished this long speech about the history of the Cowboys, which he basically gave at the press conference too. And then he stood up and he said, "And you're the man to be the next Cowboys head coach." And then, you know, Mike McCarthy, you know, gave him a hug and he said, "I knew at that moment I would be telling that story for the rest of my life." Like, he's, you know, I think that's what Jerry wants. He wants someone who's going to totally buy in. Doesn't mean he's going to do a bad job of it at all, but he seemed perfectly comfortable up there, like suddenly Mike McCarthy is like cracking a lot of jokes about, you know,
remake, catch it, or whatever.
McCarthy 2.0.
Like, yeah. He also, he told Jerry Jones that he diligently pored over tape of every single Cowboys game from last season. Then during the press conference, oddly, took that back and said that wasn't true, but he's glad he told Jerry Jones that.
Yeah, that's right. He said, yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, so you watched every Cowboys play, you know, as you, and he was like, well, you know, you say some things when you're in interviews to get the job.
Oh, my God. I guess it is too late. They pen's gone to paper.
Part of the Cowboys' mystique is real, though. Like, the facilities are more grand
he was talking
and
about
impressive.
That, yeah.
The star.
The history is a little richer than some other places.
The ratings are higher.
And there's way more eyeballs on what you're doing. There's way more people who care about your team than most franchises.
And unlike, you know, Rhule is going with these position coaches or college coaches, at least as coordinator, that have no experience, that we don't know much about. You know, McCarthy's assembling kind of an all-star cast, and I think that's what he was getting – you know, hired for. Bones Fossil is coming from the Rams.
How about that?
I found to be one of the biggest news items from yesterday.
Joey Philbs, I think, is going to do the offensive line. So he is a guy that has a lot of connection. He's been in the league. He had
Joey
kind
Bubblegum.
Of a staff ready to go. And Kellen.
The Rams are losing Bones and Wade Phillips. Okay.
Ricky, you had a takeaway from the pressers, too.
I just think we had a lot of great pressers, but I feel like this was my most favorite moment.
Okay.
And we're interviewing, we're going on, and Marty Herney, that kind of thing. You know, so, you know, Marty's going with his toughness, his questions, his dad.
That was cool, Dad, mocking Marty Herney, the GM.
That was so funny to me, like, to hear that on the TVs, and it had, like, no context.
That, you know what?
Like 8 years ago, I could have translated that for you.
Marty Herney, who's still technically the GM of the Panthers, right? It's funny. I was listening back to our great Peter Schrager conversation, and Schrager made a point that, like, one of the reasons why Panthers were able to seal the deal with Rhule was, like, it was just one-on-one, mano-a-mano, and it was the owner, Tepper, straight to Rhule, and the Giants had a four-man army that needed to work things out. Was Marty Herney even, like, invited to any part of this process? Like, this is worse than Howie Roseman under Chip Kelly.
It's very similar. He would not be doing these little mocking voices of Herney if Herney was in the position of power.
Marty, quit. No job's worth it. No job's worth this.
Hey, I
disagree. Keep your dignity, bro.
I disagree. That five, whatever he's making to do whatever he's doing, it's going to be setting up the Herney grandchildren for years. Just keep your mouth shut.
Tepper is doing the total CEO thing. Whenever you take over a company, you spend the first year or two making it very clear that you're the dude and no one else will challenge you on any level. And has some experience.
Look at all these yellow taxicabs. They're everywhere.
Marty Herney.
Dan has, like, never been to a southern state, apparently. Like, this is like the eighth person he's slashing through based on dialect.
He's from New York. We know what he thinks about the South.
No, that's not true.
Oh. It is entirely true.
Now, you can't go, Dan only loves America, and now you're going to narrow me down further.
Yeah. Yes, we can do that.
I love the entire continental United States. Alaska? I don't know. I don't know about Alaska.
I love Alaska.
All right, I'm in on Alaska, too. Hawaii, love it. Did my honeymoon there. Give me all 50. All right, let's get back to it. That's what's happening.
America now feeling so much better about itself.
Let's go with the Sunday game starting 3:05 Eastern. Kickoff, the Houston Texans at the Kansas City Chiefs. So, of course, the Chiefs coming off the bye, and they are ready to roll. They got some demons. We know that. The divisional round, Arrowhead Stadium, some bad stuff has happened there in the last 20, 25 years. But this is a fresh start, and they get the Texans, Greg, who obviously had that great comeback against the Bills. But also, if you're the Chiefs, you could watch that game last Saturday and be like, oh, we got this. We got this, right?
If they play that way again, if the offensive line doesn't show up, that was the takeaway I had after having a really good season overall protecting Deshaun Watson. They were a total mess. And I would say that really continued in the fourth quarter. This was a game where rewatching it really made me appreciate everything Deshaun Watson did. I think Wes hit the nail on the head when he said star players kind of stepping up in the fourth quarter and taking over, because Watson wasn't getting a ton of help. Hopkins made plays on his own. Every time Duke Johnson touched the ball,
what a great game.
He made a huge play. Six touches, almost all of them he made a huge play. Merciless ended three drives in the fourth quarter alone with big plays, and we've talked about J.J. Watt. This was the players, and the takeaway I would have if I'm watching Kansas City, I'm Steve Spagnuolo, is they could not identify where the pressure was coming from. And this is kind of an old Texans problem, and whatever it is that McDermott was doing in terms of how he was sending people, the offensive line, Watson, the coaching staff, didn't know what to do. There were so many times in that game where they max protected like six, seven players to block four, and there was a free rusher where two guys are guarding two, another two guys are guarding two, and then up the like, and then there's a free rush, and you just can't, like, you just cannot win. And who is greater at doing that than Steve Spagnuolo? He's done a great job with that all year, and he's got the players, Chris Jones, Frank Clark. The last time we saw them, they were balling. I just think that's a mismatch that the Texans, there's no part of their team to me that gives the Chiefs as big of a mismatch as that could be.
I think it's heartwarming how much you've warmed to Steve Spagnuolo and have credited him all year.
He's had a good year.
And I think you mentioned what they've got going up front. This is the third time now in Honey Badger's career where we've seen him reach all-pro level and sustain it for months at a time. And they've been, I believe, the number one defense in the NFL since Week 11. Also the number one passer rating against since Week 11. Stingiest pass defense in the league. This is a transformed defense, and I think it starts with Honey Badger. And I know they lost Juan Thornhill, but they've got an experienced guy in Daniel Sorensen who steps right in, and they don't lose much there.
That's why I throw out the Week 6 result largely, where they put up 31 points on Kansas City. And, you know, you can look at what Seattle did and say, well, you dealt with Josh McCown, of course, so we don't want to see what they go when they go to deal with a real opponent. But the Texans game to me, the Bills learned a lot, I hope, as an organization, because they came in with zero game plan in the second half, showed no ability. You can talk about the Texans not scheming well for certain things. I mean, they faced a team that just completely fell apart, and the Chiefs are not going to do that with Andy Reid. I understand that Andy Reid in the playoffs has been a different experience, but that's not Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. And they're another team. They've been gone for a bit. You can kind of forget about them, but Travis Kelce, I mean, Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes, I don't see any problem with knocking out a Texans team that, you know, you traded for Laremy Tunsil, and, you know, he was a penalty machine last weekend. What was going on there?
He couldn't protect either. I think he had his worst game of the season, and that's partly why this Chiefs team is different. The Texans are different, too, because of, especially if Will Fuller plays and Watt is himself.
Well, he's not going to drop three touchdown passes again like he did in Week 6.
Right. But the Chiefs kind of rarely had all their guys together. And now you got Mecole Hardman. Damian Williams, I think, adds a lot compared mm-hmm. to what else they were rolling out there. Frank Clark wasn't really healthy for much of the year, but finished very strong. So they're a healthier team than they used to be.
Clark had 7 sacks, 11 QB hits, 9 tackles for loss, 3 passes knocked down in the last 8 games. Mm. That's what this game comes down to for me is after
that's
that
Daniil Hunter production.
Yeah, after that terrible performance by Tunsil and the Texans, if they deliver that type of performance again, this game is going to be ugly. It's going to be one of those Bill O'Brien losses that, you know, Wes will be dancing in his cubicle over 44-10,
something
like that. I don't
celebrate when the Texans lose.
But I'm telling you that this game, this is the game to me that is most likely to end up in a grisly manner, and that's why I'm locking up the Chiefs this week.
I'm also locking up the Chiefs this week.
Okay, good.
So yes. Am I. Wow, we're all together.
Oh, you're locking them up?
I adore this.
I mean, I'm not exactly.
Because there is another scenario where Deshaun Watson just does special, strange things and everything goes weird.
Absolutely. I think there's a route for every one of these underdog teams to win. But this one, I just felt slightly better.
All right, I'm going to pull out of my lock.
Oh, okay.
Only because I need to make up ground here.
Is this the Ryan Pace Bowl?
The Ryan Pace Bowl, yes. Why is it the Ryan Pace Bowl?
He bypass both of these quarterbacks to draft Mitch Trubisky.
I don't know if bowl is the right
right. That is
toilet bowl.
That would be the concern because Watson, I think, played really well last week. You wonder if they'll make him running a little bigger part of the game plan, like going into it. He ran more last week than he did all season. He's run less and less every year of his career in terms of times per game, and yet it's such a big weapon, and
if ever
you're gonna break it out, it feels like this would be the week.
He's to me so close to Russell Wilson to where
you gotta
drive a stake through Russell Wilson's heart to kill him make him stop coming back. And Deshaun Watson's the same way. They both make pretty good decisions with the ball. I mean, great decisions with the ball in their hands. They're not just runners. They're great decision
makers. It's a concern. I mean,
Dan, you know in those like the old films about being out in the jungle and they'd be traveling through, yes. and then you'd fall into one of those traps where it's a bunch of sticks and leaves, right. and there's just a big... Wes and Greg just went right in that hole, and you just saved yourself.
Well, I caught myself.
Into. You did.
A vine was thrown up.
So I waited till the end of the segment, and then you would have just been stuck?
And like someone throws a vine, I pull it up, and there's Mark, and he looks so hot. Just like he's wearing like a safari outfit and a little bit of sweat, but a little bit of... dirt, but also just like I've never seen his body look so great.
You just want to
like,
keep pounding.
Yeah, keep pounding.
I'm not concerned about that right. cartoon scenario you laid out there.
Don't be.
I'm
be concerned
not
about it on Sunday night.
Okay. Maybe concerned about yours.
Let me say the people should kind of check themselves a little bit. Is like with playing the Will Fuller's back, so the Texans will be back with their offense. Because how do we know if this guy's got any? If he's got more than three series in him? I guess you could say the same thing last week about J.J. Watt. But J.J. Watt is superhuman.
He's J.J. Watt's not running 4.3 down the sideline.
And it was a torn
pec. Different situation.
And J.J. Watt, frankly, did not. You know, I think if they look at last week's game, he'll probably be stronger this week. But they struggled on some of those runs to the outside. A lot of the misdirection. He had kind of a un-J.J. Watt game as a run defender.
Well, he wasn't even on the field for run plays
right.
early in
which
the game.
Which is why I think they kept him off was. Maybe that wasn't going to be his MO right coming right off the bench. And maybe he'll be better. But if you think about their like speed at linebacker and just the things that Kansas City can do in terms of running, whether it's Hardman or Hill or Williams on these end arounds. I mean, man, Andy Reid with a couple weeks off, he's going to throw a lot at you and test like the edges. It's the defense. I think Watson might play great, and it's just the defense I can't imagine for Houston stopping
him. Tyreek Hill against these cornerbacks? I mean, I just have visions of that Steve Smith game against the Bears where he's just going bonkers for 200 yards.
All right, let's pick it. Mark?
Kansas City, 32. Texans, 28.
Wes.
Chiefs 34, Texans 18.
I got Chiefs 40, Texans 10.
Has any human ever tracked these
Chiefs
picks
40,
on a level?
Texans 10.
Whoa!
You're not locking it up.
What a heel turn on the Texans.
No, I did lock him up, but I had to pull out for the – I'm down two games, so I got to go somewhere else.
Go back in that trap.
I have the Chiefs 37, the Texans 27. Watch out for this guy, Rashad Fenton. They suddenly played him in week 17 last.
He's a cornerback.
He's a cornerback for the Chiefs, and he balled out. And he might be, who knows, I wouldn't be surprised if he's starting this game.
The final game of divisional round weekend is a 6:40 p.m. kickoff Eastern. Seahawks at Packers. Seahawks survive the Eagles C squad last week. Need to be better to beat the Packers. But we also don't know quite what to expect, Greg, from the Packers, who coming off a bye week and their last here's a number, very interesting actually. I didn't even notice this, but their last 4 weeks of the season, 20 points, 21 points, 23 points, 23 points. They just don't score a lot of points, and that removes margin of error for any team, especially a top seed.
It's unbelievable to enter a Packers playoff game where they're at a disadvantage at quarterback. I don't even think.
Ooh.
I mean, it's not arguable. I mean, who knows? Maybe Rodgers plays great, but
I'm sure you'd find people that would argue. But I know what you're saying.
He wasn't in the class of Russell Wilson throughout the season, and certainly not, you know, in December how Rodgers was playing. I mean, it's probably back. Who was their quarterback the last time they would have had a disadvantage? Did Don Majkowski ever make the playoffs? I don't think he ever did.
Yes, he did.
I mean,
he didn't get the nickname Magic Man for nothing, Greg.
And hopefully. Seattle recognizes that, and they let Russ eat. You know, let him cook. Russ versus the world. Bombs away. Throw on early downs. Don't wait till third and 10.
If you're Mike Pettine and you saw what happened last game with the Seahawks, you're like, yeah, please run Travis Homer between the tackles against Kenny Clark.
That's what I'm kind of saying.
Same thing with Brian Schottenheimer. It's the same thing with Bill O'Brien in the last game we talked. You know, watch this game film, see what didn't work last week, and, you know, lean on what works and do what Russell Wilson does best, which is bombing teams into oblivion, making plays with his legs, just like Deshaun Watson shouldn't be waiting until the third quarter to be using his legs to make the offense move. Mm. Schottenheimer is always a guy that's a figure that you study and say, oh, is he part of the solution or the problem? But I don't think this is a game where you need a monster performance from the Seattle offense. It just doesn't seem like that's the way this is.
Why not go for one?
Well, I mean,
I'm sure they'll try. I mean,
they also feel like a car where like running out of gas. I mean, you don't have your top three running backs. We don't know what's happening with Dwayne Brown. There's whispers that he might play, but Pete Carroll kind of famously kind of over get those situations as he pumps up what the availability.
And even the
of
other guys, I think they had four offensive linemen miss practice.
Four linemen
miss
practice. Ziggy Ansah, Will Disley's been gone forever. Michael Kendricks went to IR. I mean, this is a roster. You know, we're talking about the Niners and the Vikings and other teams getting healthy. These guys, it is smoke and mirrors right now, and I couldn't have any more admiration for the Seahawks, but I could see it coming to an end. In a game where it's meant to be about 25 degrees, and that does not count the blustery winds.
Well, that's the difference between the two quarterbacks, and that's kind of the equalizer that Aaron Rodgers has played 31 games below freezing, and his numbers in those games are better than his career numbers. He's a better quarterback in bad weather, and Russell Wilson's a worse quarterback in bad weather.
And the matchups for Seattle, like for the most part, are terrible, but they did, I thought, stay pretty aggressive after they got in that two-minute situation against Philadelphia late in the first half. I was encouraged that they kept going bombs away, not just to finish off the game on that 3rd and 10, but like the first play after they hit Metcalf for that long touchdown, the next first down they have, they go long. And those receivers, Lockett and Metcalf especially, against these Packers cornerbacks, I don't know. That's your route, I think, and you're hoping that Pettine sends the house and you get some man coverage, and Russell just makes you look bad by evading free rushers and goes deep.
Well, there's a flip side to that. Russell Wilson is one of the worst quarterbacks in the league versus pressure this year. He has been less than what he's been in years past when it comes to pressure, and part of that is because their offensive line is a little bit worse than it was last year.
Way worse, I think.
And the Packers have they had the highest pressure rate in the NFL all year, with Zadarius Smith, Preston Smith, and Kenny Clark all bringing heat.
It was a lot of similar plays with their offensive line, too, where they left in seven players. I'm thinking of one of their big play, the Russell Wilson 22-yard run, where they had seven guys in to block four, and they still got pressure on Russell Wilson, and he had to run to kind of save the day. And like the matchup, the old, you know, truism is like, you win football in the trenches. It's like the Packers' trenches. We'll trash the Seahawks trenches.
I wish that was your regular voice.
on both sides of the ball, like the defensive line, Kenny Clark and Zadarius Smith, and the offensive line. Clowney was okay last week, but he goes for so many big plays that he gives up some big plays too in the running game, and that's tough against Aaron
Jones. I know it feels like 20 years ago, but that first half against the Detroit Lions raised some just genuine concerns about the Packers' ability to go through, you know, multiple games in the NFC and score points when they need to. I think outside of Davante Adams, it's just like, who can you count on? Part of Aaron Rodgers struggling is, and I know, you know, other quarterbacks don't have a flurry of weapons around them either, but there's not a lot of guys in the passing game that Aaron Rodgers can consistently make plays with.
Here's the thing. We've been very patient with you, Aaron Rodgers. It is time for you to be Aaron Rodgers again. And if you're not, let us know. Be terrible in this game. Lose to the Seahawks at home in the divisional round so we can officially recalibrate who you are. Because you look at what he's facing. This is a Seahawks team that can't stop the pass, that can't rush the quarterback. They're beat up. You're in your building. You've had 2 weeks to prepare. Will you put up 30 points, Aaron Rodgers? Will you go win a football game? Dude, do we need to sweat out 20-17 here?
Yes.
Can
yes,
we just
will. I think
win a game? And I'll lock up the Packers because I'll be on the Rodgers Hill for this game, and I've been waiting for 2 years for him to get back to being Aaron Rodgers. But if they fail again and they put up 17 points and they let Russell Wilson do something Russell Wilson like and get beat at home, the whole thing, you got to take a closer look at this entire operation starting at the QB position. He's not going anywhere.
And you'll have disappointed Dan, which I think will be the cruelest blow.
But this idea, that we've always said, well, the only problem with the Packers offense is they don't have enough weapons around them or they can't get in sync. Well, let's see Aaron Rodgers rise above it.
Let me drop my cornhole theory on you.
Yes.
So you've gotten to the point now where you're pretty good in cornhole. You think you can hit the hole pretty much whenever you want, no matter where the other guy's bags are.
After a couple Tito's, sure.
Yeah. So you get to the point. I think a lot of good cornhole players get to the point where they stop worrying about the other guy's bag and just go for the hole. no matter what the situation calls for, they're still going for that hole because they know they can do
sure,
it. They've
put
done
it, in
it
the
before.
Hole.
You want the challenge. That's how Aaron Rodgers plays quarterback the last few years. I'm going for the hole every time. I'm not going to take the check down. I'm not going to take the slant. I'm going deep down the field. All of these, oh, he just barely missed a throw with perfect loft, perfect trajectory, perfect timing.
He wants the big ones.
Because the guy's covered.
This,
it's a
Wes.
Hard throw. You're putting it into a keyhole every time.
To extend this analogy further, let's say you and I are throwing corn. We're throwing bags. I throw first, all right? Your Honor, Your Honor. I put it not in the hole, but right in front of the hole. And your famous line when that happens is what? I think son of a biscuit, you might say.
Bollocks?
Bollocks.
Wow.
Son of a building block.
Because that jacks up the round because you have a blockade. Rodgers, instead of playing a more strategic game and taking what the board gives him, he's still going for the hole. Start just trying to accumulate points.
There's a thing. When you are good enough to hit that hole, then you're the best. And I think when he thinks about how to play quarterback, it's like the best quarterback has to make the best throws, whereas I think Brady and Breeze think – the best quarterback has to make the right throws.
And
right.
he could do it.
But he throws the ball. He also throws the ball away more.
We're talking cornhole here,
Greg. Avoids interception. All right, but to extend the cornhole analogy,
all right.
So he's always going for the hole.
He's going for the airmail. He's putting it over the bags into the hole.
He's not taking what the board gives him. What defense is more suited or more known for kind of giving you the easier throws but not the tough ones than the Seattle Seahawks? I mean, when I think Pete Carroll's defense, that's what I think. They're going to make you – they're not the most talented Seahawks defense, but they're going to make you work down the field.
Thing is, Rodgers is good enough
slowly.
To do it. He's good enough to
right.
do it. Like,
but
when
will
you
he
think
be patient
him,
enough?
They
are
style?
Not a defense that gives up big plays. They're okay, if you can go down in 10 plays and beat us and do everything right, go for it.
Every quarterback has a style they play with. What's his style? I would argue that it's that sideline throw to Jared Cook.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make the most difficult throw, and I'm the only one who can pull it off. That's Aaron Rodgers' playing style.
Little braggy.
I think that might be his personality,
and
too.
To win in cornhole, you got to win. You got to get 21. I don't want 21. This is where the analogy ends. I want 30-plus points.
It's never ending.
And I want 30 to 14 and go win a ball game and coast into Championship Sunday, locking up the GB.
Well, I don't know what you're doing, Dan, with that one, but we'll see.
You're
on Seahawks
I you
corner.
The Seahawks. Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot.
You're on Seahawks corner.
I mean, that was always a manufactured joke. Please.
No, it's not.
No, it's not a joke.
You're locking against them.
No, it has nothing. It's never being on Seahawks corner to me doesn't mean that I root for them like I root for the Jets. It means they're a fun team. They're
root
not
for
a team
them at all. You're
like
not rooting
what you
for them
did,
Sunday.
You read the tea leaves improperly in August and said, "Oh, they're not going to be good this year." And I said, "Greg, this team figures it out.
Yeah.
I'm going on this corner while you bail." So, but I don't think it's a Super Bowl team, and I don't think, quite frankly, the Packers are either. But I think this is a good draw for Green Bay, who might be a little vulnerable. But I think the Seattle Seahawks are the worst.
Bitterly disappointing to lose this game if you're Green Bay. I get that they're not the same 13-3 team as the, you know, the 89 Niners or something, but give me a break if you don't take
fresh,
care of business.
They're
here.
Talented. They, you know, they've had their moments, and
defense is playing great lately.
I don't know if Aaron Rodgers needs to have that big game. The Seahawks have given up 162 yards per game on the ground over the last five. You know, we were talking about their lack of a pass rush. That's one of the worst rush defenses in the league. Even the Eagles, with Josh McCown and Boston Scott, had a pretty good day running the ball against them. They have not been able to just slow down opponents. And so it's, you know, Aaron Jones, I think, could be the one who ends up, you know, rolling.
Why not have that be your plan? I mean, like, spend the first half trying just to maul them with the run. And by the way, Don Majkowski went 10-6 with the Packers, but did not play a playoff game. But he did play a playoff game with the Lions. For any Packers fans trying to construct a tweet right now, delete it.
So Lynn Dickey was the last Packers quarterback that might have had a disadvantage in a playoff game. Lynn Dickey.
Pick the game, Mark.
I think Green Bay will win this game. No, I'm going to go Seattle. Seattle wins 19-17.
The whole time you were going to pick Green Bay, but now that Dan locked
no,
up
no,
the
no.
Packers,
I am on Seahawks corner too, and as much as you can describe it as you think it's a sham or something, I genuinely find them fun in the playoffs and would like to see them advance.
Were they fun last week?
That game was very fun. Josh McCown and, you know, suddenly DK Metcalf takes off into the skies.
I'm all set with Seattle. Wes.
Packers 30, Seahawks 22.
I'm all set with Seattle, says the guy on Seahawks corner.
Well, till August. 35-17. That's my pick.
Wow.
Packers. Give me five touchdowns, Aaron Rodgers. Let's go.
That is audacious.
I do have the Packers winning as well, 23-20.
Okay.
Nice close game.
Good stuff. We will be back on Sunday night recapping all the games we just previewed, so make sure you check that out. And a reminder that the Around the NFL broadcast, our television program in a limited run on NFL Network, will air Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, with re-airs in the early morning on Saturday. So please support it. Check us out. And we did. Mark was right. What he said on our last show, that we got good numbers. People turned out and turned on the TV and watched our show, and that was awesome to hear. So please keep supporting the show. We love you. And
they do say on TV, the whole thing, like we rallied everyone to watch last week, but people in general, don't, you know, they have other things to do come week two. If suddenly we are the eighth or ninth show out of eight or nine,
don't
you
speak
might not
it
see
into
us
existence.
Again. Well, no. I mean, we're going to rock the ratings, but that requires people to
We're getting
come
that live game like lead-in. We just got to roll.
Ow, rock the ratings.
Good pep talk.
Is this still done with like people, little machine, Nielsen rating box on top of someone's like television?
I don't know. It's a good question. I feel like we should be past
DVR.
That.
DVRs are part of it.
I don't know.
Doesn't All right. I feel like we'd need a physical box on top.
Let's go.
Don't know how it works.
This is Dan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Rick Hollywood, and the whole gang behind the glass. Till Sunday! Thank you.